We're going to move on to number 21. We will get a Lake Chubb status presentation today.
Liz or Nick, can you guys enable the sharing screen, please?
We're on it.
There we go. Can you guys see my screen okay?
Yep, we can.
All right. Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners, and Secretary Robley. My name is Chelsea Passberg, and I'm the non-game aquatic biologist for the state, and I'm stationed in Pier. And I will be giving you guys an update on the status of Lake Chubb in the Black Hills. So Lake Chubb are a small-bodied fish that's native to the Black Hills area. They don't live very long, roughly about 3 years, and they're relatively small in size, averaging about 3 inches in length. And they prefer cool, clear water streams as well as inlets to lakes. So kind of the overall geographic distribution for the species, they're native to the northern U.S. and Canada. South Dakota is on the periphery of their range, so the Black Hills is kind of the extent of their range, with the exception of the northwest corner of the state. Historically, they also occurred within the Little Missouri River Basin. They are a species of greatest conservation need in South Dakota. We added them to our Wildlife Action Plan back in 2014. And what this means is that they are then eligible for state wildlife grant funding because a lot of our native non-game species are not eligible for DJ funds. This particular species was believed to be extirpated for a long period of time from about like the late 90s until 2019 when the Rapid City Fisheries crew was out doing stream surveys and they sampled three individuals that they thought looked a little bit different. They vouchered those individuals and it was determined that they were indeed Lake Chubb. Back in 2020, some of you might recall that they were petitioned to be state listed as endangered by Nancy Hilding. At the time, we denied that petition just because we had just recently rediscovered the species in the hills and we wanted to gather more information before we provided a recommendation for state listing. So at that time, we as a department decided that we would utilize some of our state wildlife grant funding to fund a project to study and look for Lake Chubb in the Black Hills areas, as well as back in 2021, we also funded a small grant project which surveyed the Little Missouri River up in the northwest corner. Today I'll be presenting the findings from a small portion of the master's student project that we funded. But just a little side note, the Little Missouri River, that side project that we funded, they did not find any Lake Chubb within the Little Missouri River. The state wildlife grant project that we funded, we worked with the University of Wisconsin at La Crosse and a student by the name of Christina Morgan. So this project had, she looked at more than just Lake Chubb, but today for lack of time, I'll be focusing just specifically on Lake Chubb. But she had three kind of main components to this research. One was to look at the region-wide distribution, so surveying across the Black Hills, looking for Lake Chubb. And then once she conducted that and we figured out where the species occurred, she dove more locally into those specific areas where they were found to look at what specific habitat requirements and components of that specific area found the Lake Chubb. That way then we can utilize that information moving forward, as well as looking at the population structure. She took fin clips from the Lake Chubb to conduct genetic analysis. That way then we can figure out how many populations are we talking about here for management moving forward. So for Lake Chubb specifically, there were three sub-basins, two within the Middle Cheyenne and one within the Rapid Creek sub-basin, where we had historic records for Lake Chubb. She sampled a total of 47 different stream reaches, which included historic records, which are highlighted here with the blue X's on the map. These were back from 1893 when the species was first discovered in South Dakota, all the way current. We also included the 2019 rediscovery of the species in the hills as well. And then additionally, she incorporated exploratory sites. And what this, the definition of this was, it was sites that were nearby or within stream watersheds that were attached to this historic distribution, as well as areas where we had unvouchered records from the past. So these two fish here on the left, the top is a photograph of a lake chub, and the bottom is a photograph of a creek chub. Now, these two species can look very, very similar, and so there is some question about some of our historic occurrences as to whether or not they were potentially misidentifications. So if we don't have a physical voucher, so you preserve that fish and keep it to move forward, we have no real concrete way to say that the historic records were lake chub or creek chub. So just to make sure that we covered all of our bases, we also sampled areas in the hills where we have known occurrences of creek chub, just because that's a relatively more common species, just to make sure that we weren't potentially missing any lake chub within the hills. So the sampling design for this project, each one of those 47 stream reaches that I mentioned previously, we took a 500 meter section of stream and we kind of broke it up into three 100 meter stretches to conduct backpack electrofishy. And the reason why we did that is that way then we could put this into some modeling efforts to determine the detection probability, so how confident we are that we're actually finding this rare species in the hills, as well as every 50 meters conducting habitat measurements, so that way then we can put that into modeling, so that way we can determine what specific habitat requirements this particular species is occupying. So this kind of breaks up the habitat component of this. So there was five main things that we looked at. One was the riparian habitat. So what did the stream edges look like for this species? What was the bank slope like? What was the habitat vegetation like? The stream macro habitat, so this would be more like your pool riffles and runs. So what type of macro habitat are these species occupying? Fish cover, so are they occupying areas with log jams or large boulders? As well as anthropogenic influence. So this would be bridges, dams, culverts. Are they occupying these areas or avoiding these areas? As well as the in-stream habitat metrics, which would be the photograph on the right. So what's the substrate like? What's the stream flow like? And what types of in-stream habitat metrics does this particular species prefer? So diving into the region-wide distribution for the species, so of those three sub-basins that we sampled, Lake Chubb were only found within the Middle Cheyenne Elk watershed. And this, and more particularly, this would be Box Elder Creek, which was the area that in 2019 our staff rediscovered the species. So of the 47 stream reaches that we sampled, Lake Chubb were only sampled at five locations, which is only about 5%, which seems pretty low. But she also sampled 147 individuals, and I'd like to point out that this particular species has never been overly common in the hills, so these numbers that she collected in a one-year time frame were actually almost half of what was sampled over the entire, you know, from 1893 to 2019. So, this is a small-bodied fishes that's pretty rare, so she sampled quite a few individuals, even though they were only at the five sites. So this detection probability, that's where I talked about, you know, when we did the three electrofishing samples. The reason why we do that is that way then we can be confident that you can increase your effort by the number of extra electrofishing efforts that you're putting in. So for example, if we were to go out and only sample one 100 meter electrofishing pass, we only have roughly an 18% chance of detecting this individual. 3 electrofishing passes is more standard for what you would see for a study like this, and that increased the detection probability to 40%. Now, I know that sounds pretty low, but for a rare species, this is not uncommon. This is actually a fairly good detection probability. And basically, the more effort that you put in, the higher chance that you have to actually find the species, given that they're pretty rare. So looking more closely at the local occurrence, so this is where she went back then to where areas where we found, where she found lake chub, and did additional sampling. So she sampled an additional 71 stream transects. So this would be more of those 3 electrofishing passes. And from that, we found that lake chub were found at 15 sites within Box Elder Creek. So for this effort, they sampled both Box Elder Creek as well as about, I think, 25 different stream tributaries of Box Elder Creek. And they were only found at 15 of those sites. They typically were at that downstream end, so this box highlighted in red here, they were found only within Box Elder Creek itself and one single tributary, Bogus Jim. And then also I wanted to highlight the Lost Zone and the importance of that. So this next slide here, just to kind of, I'm not very familiar with the Black Hills area living in central South Dakota, so I had to have this explained to me, so I figured I'd share some photographs for you guys. But the Lost Zone is an area where water is intermittent and only a few pools or springs are found year-round. So these spring-fed pools will stay year-round, but there's a loss of connectivity with the main stream. This occurs through several streams throughout the Black Hills, and basically during spring high water events, this Lost Zone would connect with the main stem. So it would connect with Box Elder Creek, but for majority of the year, and even sometimes for an entire year, these isolated pools will stay separate. And so for this study, she found lake chub not only within Box Elder Creek and Bogus Jim, its tributary, but also the Lost Zone was a very important area where lake chub were found to persist. So some overall findings of the study, so all those habitat parameters that she looked at and putting those into models, we found that lake chub were predominantly found in slow water velocities, so they typically occupied those more pool-like habitats. They definitely benefited from spring-fed influence, so areas that we had springs in the stream, they tended to flourish within those areas, as well as areas where there was lower trout abundance. So for the genetic side of things, from the tissue samples, what we found was that there wasn't a lot of genetic divergence. And what that means from a management standpoint is that this population can be managed as a single population. There was a little bit of genetic divergence where it was a little bit unique for Bogus Jim. However, during those high water events, Box Elder, the Lost Zone, and Bogus Jim, there's enough gene flow occurring that this would be managed as a single population. As far as the size structure and the numbers of fish, Box Elder Creek in the Lost Zone had a larger length history, larger size structure, so there was both smaller and larger individuals. However, overall as a whole, this population, they were typically a little bit larger and there was fewer individuals sampled, whereas in Bogus Jim Creek, so that tributary offshoot, the fish were typically smaller, but there was more individuals. However, there was multiple year classes documented within both Box Elder and Bogus Jim, suggesting that reproduction is occurring within both areas. So what does this mean for the future of lake chub within the Black Hills? Basically, we will continue conservation planning and habitat protection for lake chub specifically, as well as other fishes in the hills. We do this within our Black Hills Aquatic Strategic Planning. We also, as I stated earlier, this is a species of greatest conservation need, which we monitor within our State Wildlife Action Plan, and currently we are conducting a major revision for that. As well as we continue to work with our partners, the Forest Service is currently undergoing some of their own planning efforts, and we've been working closely with them to make sure that lake chub is included within their planning efforts. as well as next year in 2024, we will do a revision of and review of our state T&E species, so our state threatened and endangered species, and we would include and review Lake Chub at that time. Moving forward, translocations, our staff has identified two potential areas that the habitat requirements and the needs for this particular species could be met in those areas. We've identified those. This bottom right picture here is on French Creek. That's one area that we're proposing to potentially do a translocation, as well as I believe there's a tributary on Battle Creek, which has also been identified as a potential area where we could do a translocation. This is a practice that we use commonly in fisheries. We use it for sport fish quite often. And now with AIS concerns, that potentially could be a concern of yours, but we do have protocols in place where we would take those precautions that we're not being a vector to spread AIS, as well as continued monitoring. We definitely, now that we know that box elder is kind of our stronghold for this population, we will continue to monitor those that population within Box Elder Creek, as well as when we conduct any of these translocations, we will monitor those populations moving forward to determine the success of those. That way then we can potentially identify other areas where we can conduct translocations going forward. So with that, I will take any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Chelsea. Any questions on the presentation or comments? Commissioner Beese.
Commissioner Beese, when you talk about relocating, are you bringing fish from a area like up in Canada where there's way more of them? Or are you going to capture fish out of Box Elder or to move to our streams? Or are you going to bring them in from somewhere else?
Nope. These would be, Madam Chair.
Yes.
This would be through our own population within the state. So because we've done the genetics surveys here, we know that we can safely translocate fish from location within South Dakota to another location without potentially impacting the genetics of that species.
Other questions, comments? Commissioner Bartling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Bartling. Chelsea, you said the lifespan of these are only approximately 3 years. So how do you see the population, you know, continuing to thrive if their lifespan is really relatively short?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
So, yes, this is a shorter-lived species. This is actually really common for a lot of our native, non-native species. They all kind of have that shorter lifespan. And, you know, it definitely could have years where it could take a hit, but as you can see from my presentation with the genetics and with this population or the species continuing to persist, it definitely has continued to persist over time. So we don't really have major concerns with that moving forward.
Additional questions, comments? Interesting survey and presentation. Thank you for bringing it to us today. Job well done.
Thank you.